Leibowitz is the Director of SMICHA at Yeshiva University, as well as the Rav of the North Woodmere Shul. Rabbi Leibowitz learned at KBY and majored in finance at Yeshiva University. The topic of this shiur is From the Rabbi's Desk, a collection of interesting shilas from the past week. And Rabbi Leibowitz is open to taking questions during the shiur. Thank you. Over to Rabbi Leibowitz.
Thank you very much, and thank you for coming together to learn this. Well, for me, it's this morning. For you, this afternoon. I recall fondly my wife and I spent a wonderful Shabbos in your community several years ago, and we look forward to having the opportunity to come visit again. It was such a warm and wonderful Shabbos together, sharing Torah together, and I wish you tremendous hatzlacha, especially with your new Rav upon Rabbi Kimchi's Aliyah to Eretz Yisrael. In general, I have to begin with an apology, because whenever I'm asked to speak somewhere, the first question that people ask is what the topic is going to be. And generally, I'm not particularly good at choosing a topic far in advance, because I don't know what I'm going to be thinking about at the time of the shiur when I'm asked a few weeks in advance, sometimes even a few days in advance. And I always like to think about, to speak about that which is on my mind, that which I've been thinking about. So what I'm going to do is, and I've done this in the past in other places, and people still keep inviting me to speak, so I guess it's not too terrible, but what I'm going to do is I'm just going to share with you three questions, lahalacha, three halachic questions that people asked me in the past week, and you'll let me know which one you think we should speak about. Maybe we'll have an opportunity to speak about more than one of them, maybe not, but you let me know which one is most interesting to you. Maybe we'll take a vote in the chat as to whether question 1, 2, or 3 is most interesting to you, and that will be what we will speak about. The reason I do this is that if I choose a topic and I speak about the topic and you're unhappy with the topic, it's my fault. But if you choose the topic and you're unhappy with the topic, it's your fault. So I'm going to share with you three questions that came up this past week. Shaila number one that came up. I have a student, a very close student, a wonderful young man who is having a Shabbos lunch at his brother and sister-in-law's house. And his brother, right before it came time for Hamotzi, went to the hot plate, the warmer, and he grabbed two challahs that were each wrapped in foil off of the warmer, brought them to the table, and he recited Hamotzi on these two challahs that were wrapped in foil. He unwrapped one of them, he sliced it and distributed the challah, and everyone had a taste of Hamotzi, and he left the other challah wrapped in the foil. And then as his wife was preparing the meal, he heard her, as preparing to serve, he heard her scream from the kitchen, "Has anyone seen the salami?" And then he takes a peek under the foil of the second challah, and he sees it, in fact, was not a second challah. It was a salami. So now everyone at the table realizes that they didn't have lechem mishnah. They had one challah and one salami. So the question is, okay, they didn't have lechem mishnah. Is there anything they can do about that now? They've already washed, they've already eaten from the challah. Is there any way to fix that problem? That is shaila number one that came up this week. Shaila number two that came up this week. Somebody had moved into our neighborhood here in North Woodmere, which is on the south shore of Long Island. And this is a vibrant Orthodox community, as many vibrant Orthodox communities worldwide. There are many shuls. Even non-vibrant Orthodox communities very often have many shuls. We all know the old joke about the Jew that was deserted, stranded on a desert island all alone, and they came and found him 15 years later, and he was showing what he had built, and he, of course, had built two shuls. And they asked him, "Why do you need two synagogues?" "Well, there's one that I daven at and one that I don't daven at." So we have many shuls that people daven at and shuls that people don't daven at. So, meaning people daven at every single shul, but this fellow moved into the neighborhood. He found a shul. He's a young fellow, found a shul with young people, seemed to be like-minded people, seemed to be a place that he would probably feel comfortable, has a spirited davening, and after a week or two davening in the shul, he approached the administration of the shul and he said, "I would like to become a member. So they said, sure, no problem. I'm making up the numbers. I don't know how much membership costs. Even here, I don't know how much membership costs. I certainly have no idea what membership costs in the Ner Yisrael Shul in London, but I'm just making up. I don't pay membership. I get paid by the shul, so I don't know. I don't know what membership costs. So they so I'm making up a number, just a round number. Let's assume they said to him, sure, membership costs $1,200 per year. So if you just pay $1,200, you'll become a member. And he said, no problem, I'd like to become a member, but I'd rather pay quarterly rather than pay all at once. $1,200 is a lot of money for me, so I'll pay $300 now, and you'll bill me quarterly. And they said, absolutely, no problem. We do that all the time. After a few months in the shul, he realized that while the shul was a wonderful place, it wasn't really the right fit for him and his family. He wasn't perfectly comfortable in the shul, and he found another shul that was a better fit for him and his family. And by the time the 3 months were over, he was no longer going to that shul at all, to the first shul at all. He now had become a member of a second shul where he was spending all of his time, all of the three tefillos a day in this second shul. So his shaila to me was, does he have to continue to pay membership for the first year in that first shul? Or do we assume that since he only used it for 3 months, his 3 months, $300 for 3 months, was he used it for even less than 3 months, that initial $300 would be enough, and now he can pay membership in the new shul where he had actually joined? So that is shaila number two that came up this week that I thought was an interesting shaila. A third shaila that came up this week is not as unique as the first two, but maybe that's what makes it most interesting, because this comes up every single year. This time of year, I get this question from at least a half a dozen people. So I would imagine this might be something universal. Again, it's hard to know what is relevant in a different country, in a different community, but I can tell you this is certainly relevant here in the New York area in the United States. And that is as follows. Someone texted me a WhatsApp message. I have a question. I'm just going to read the message. I have a question regarding non-kosher wine. We received a bottle of wine as a gift that is not kosher. I'm not sure if this makes a difference, but a Jewish non-religious person gifted it to us, and now I would like to re-gift it to the mailman. Am I allowed to re-gift a bottle of non-kosher wine that I had received since I can't drink it anyway? My husband said that I should ask if this is okay, even though I don't see what the problem would possibly be. So those are the three questions. So again, question number one, Lecha Mishnah on one challah and one salami. Question number two, continuing to pay membership if in a shul that you no longer use, but for that initial first year of membership. And question number three, re-gifting a bottle of non-kosher wine. So I think the best way to let me know which one you'd like to speak about is if you could just put either the number 1, 2, or 3 in the chat of the Zoom, and then I'll do a quick tally and see which one is most interesting. Ooh, the votes are coming in fast and furious. Okay. Oh, but some votes are coming directly to me. So if it seems that I'm picking one that are not that's not winning the vote, I have to count the direct messages also. So let me see. So for one, we have 1, 2, 3. It's so interesting because I asked these same three shailas in my shul last night, and no one voted for one. And I see we have 13 votes for one, so that's wonderful. Okay, shaila number two does not seem to have as many votes, and shaila number three. Okay, so it seems shaila number one is the most interesting to people. So, and then shaila number three is second most. Rabbi Zobin already spoke about number three in shul. So, okay, are we trying? So maybe we'll skip number three. Can I ask what Rabbi Zobin paskened in the end? Anybody want to tell me? Oh, not all of us were there. Okay, so I'll excuse not knowing what Rabbi Zobin Paskin in the end. Okay, so some was. Oh, okay. All right. But I think if Rabbi Zobin spoke about it, I certainly don't want to say something different than what he said, although I'm sure it would be the same thing anyway. But I don't want to say the same thing that he said, and I don't want to say something different from what he said. So let's try for Shaila's numbers 1 and 2, and we'll take it from there, or we'll see if we have time for both of them. So let's start with Shaila number 1. Shaila number 1, what do we do about the Lechem Mishnah situation? Is there anything to do if you missed out on the Lechem Mishnah, if you realized that you had a salami? Now, if the Shaila were a little bit different, it would be, it could change the complexion of the Shaila entirely. Meaning, let's say it wasn't a salami that you had taken off of the hot plate, but it was a babka, let's say, or a something that was on the, a cake that was on the hot plate because it had previously been in the freezer, and you were just trying to defrost it, or something like that, or maybe a kugel that had some actual grain product in it. So in such a case, it would be entirely different than a salami, because one thing is for sure, a salami definitely does not count toward Lechem Mishnah, right? It definitely does not work. It would not be nearly as obvious that a cake does not work as Lechem Mishnah, and then it could be in such a case that you already have Bin Yotzei Lechem Mishnah. But in the case that we have right here, the salami, this family was certainly not Yotzei Lechem Mishnah. So let's discuss a little bit where Lechem Mishnah comes from, where the obligation comes from, and then try to apply it to our case. So the Torah tells us in Shemos Perek Tazayin Pasuk Chav Beis that when Klal Yisrael was traveling through the Midbar in Parshas Beshalach, that Vayhi b'Yom HaShishi looked at Lechem Mishnah Shnei Omer LeEchad, that they would take a double portion of on Friday Shnei Omer. Every person received a double portion of man on Friday. Oh, sausage contains plenty of bread? Is that true? I did not know that. Yeah, is that someone just put that in the chat? Is that true that sausage contains bread? But the I assume it's only to hold it together, that it's not to provide any
we
taste.
We have a pasuk for it. V'noisen lechem lechol basar.
Yes, it makes it cheaper to produce. I understand that, but the function is only to make it cheaper. Does not to add any flavor or any or to change the taste, because that might make a big difference in terms of its bracha. Meaning, when I have a salami, I always say a shahakol. I assume that normally, if you have the Gemara says kol sheyesh bo chameshas minei dagan, anything that has chameshas minei dagan in it, anything that has grain in it, the bracha is going to be mezonos. The bracha is not going to be based on the majority or even based on what we would normally consider the ikker. Normally we follow certain rules of what's an ikker and what's a tafel, of what's the primary and what's the secondary. Yet when it comes to anything that has chameshas minei dagan, anything that has one of the five grains become the ikker. That's why there's a major machlokas haposkim, a major discussion in poskim. What if you have a chicken cutlet, a piece of schnitzel that has breading on it? Is the bracha shahakol niya bidvaro, or is the bracha borei minei mizonos? Because after all, it has chameshes minei dagan, maybe just a little bit of chameshes minei dagan. So many of the poskim say, no. When something has chameshes minei dagan, it's borei minei mizonos, but that's only if the chameshes minei dagan is at least close to being an ikker. It could look like an ikker. One could think that it's somewhat primary, but when it comes to a chicken cutlet, it's so obvious that the breading around the chicken cutlet is just so that it doesn't burn in the frying pan, or just so that you have something, a little bit of a crunch or something, but it doesn't really add any food quality to the chicken cutlet, and therefore does not get a mizonos, it's a shahakol. Whereas other poskim say, what do you mean? The Gemara says explicitly that anytime something has one of the five grains, it's automatically going to be mizonos, even if it is not the ikker. Personally, I'm more sensitive to that second approach, that it should be a bari minim zonos. I think that's how Rav Nevin Sal Shlita, the former Rav of the old city of Yerushalayim, paskins that it should be a mizonos, although in all likelihood he probably doesn't eat schnitzel unless he washes first, so to avoid any chashash of making the wrong bracha. That's probably a personal chumra that he has, I would bet, but this is a major discussion, so this is very interesting to me. You know, someone maybe should Google this during the shiur. I don't encourage you to not listen to the shiur, but maybe Google it while I'm speaking. You can let me know what the prevalence of bread in a salami is. It could change the complexion of our shaila. But going back to the basis of the concept of Lecha Mishnah. So it's based on the fact that we got a double portion of man, and the Gemara in Shabbos, Kuf Yud Zayin Amud Beis, derives from the phrase Lecha Mishnah, that there's an obligation to have two loaves of bread for every Shabbos meal, and we know that certainly on Friday night and Shabbos morning, we have two loaves of bread. There is a discussion whether Shalosh Udos also requires Lecha Mishnah, or perhaps at the Sudash Lishis, at the third meal on Shabbos, maybe we do not require Lecha Mishnah, maybe even less. There's a Machlokas Rishonim, exactly what you can get away with for Sudash Lishis, but certainly even for Sudash Lishis, which is also a Zecher to the Man, the fact that we have three meals on Shabbos is also a Zecher to the Man, it would seem appropriate to have Lecha Mishnah by all Shabbos meals. So if it's based on a phrase in the Torah, Lecha Mishnah, maybe that tells us that Lecha Mishnah is a chiyuv da'oraisa, that it is an obligation, a biblical obligation, which would make it something very significant that the person missed out on. The Aruch HaShulchan writes, though, in Simen Reish Ayin Dalid, that the obligation of Lecha Mishnah is in fact da'oraisa, that the phrase Lecha Mishnah is teaching us pshuto kimashma'o, that a person needs two loaves of bread on a da'oraisa level. And the Rabbi Abba clearly thought that the phrase Lecha Mishnah was extra, it was superfluous, and the Torah could have just said Shnei Ha'omer Le'echad. By saying Lecha Mishnah, it's telling us that there is in fact a din da'oraisa. That is also the opinion of the Taz on the side of the Shulchan Aruch. The Magen Avraham and the Prima Gadim disagree. The Magen Avraham says, no, Lecha Mishnah is not an obligation, midaraisa. It is not a biblical obligation. It is a rabbinic obligation. There's a pasuk. Whenever there's a pasuk, doesn't that seem to indicate that something is a biblical obligation? No, not always. Very often there's a pasuk, and the pasuk is what we call an asmachta bi'alma. The pasuk is there just as an indicator, as an asmachta, as a hint to this din, but really it's only a din midrabanan. It's a question exactly what the role of asmachta is, or what the nature of asmachta is. Some of the Rishonim understand that asmachta is the way that Hashem sort of tips off the Rabbanan, that this is where I want you to make a din Rabbanan, this is where I want you to institute a din Rabbanan, whereas others understand that no, that has nothing to do with Hashem. Hashem didn't tell us to make when to institute a din Rabbanan, when not to. It's just that when the Rabbanan made a din, they figured the easiest way to remember, a mnemonic device, the easiest way to remember the dinim Rabbanan is if we can attach it to some word in the Torah, even if the word in the Torah has absolutely nothing to do with this din. So that is a machlokas between the Ritva and Maseches Rosh Hashanah and the Rambam in the Akdamah to the Perush HaMishnayis, what the nature of asmachta is. But certainly, when something is an asmachta, it is only there's even a shita, by the way, that asmachta, that when the Chazal tell us that something is a din to Rabbanan and the pasuk is an asmachta, there's even one shita in Rishonim that suggests that asmachta is the Rabbanan's way of trying to fool us, trying to trick us into believing that a din Rabbanan is a din d'oraisa, that if the Rabbanan are concerned that we're not going to be interested in this new takana, and we may not follow the new takana, so they'll attach it to a pasuk in the Torah as a way of convincing us that it's really a din d'oraisa, so that we don't have a choice whether to listen or not, and then, over time, after we've observed it for many years already, then they'll let us in on the secret, that it is, in fact, only a din d'rabbanan and not a din d'oraisa, but by then it will be too late to give up on it. So that's how some of the Rishonim suggest. Other Rishonim say that would be scandalous. So that the Rabbanan are going to lie to us about what's a din d'oraisa, what's a din d'rabbanan, that might be a violation of Baal Tosef. But be that as it may, just to bring it back to our discussion, Lecha Mishnah is a machlokas, whether it's a din d'oraisa or a din d'rabbanan. The simplest way to say this machlokas is that the Taz writes that it's a din D'Oraisa, and the Magen Avraham says that it's Din D'Rabbanan. The Taz and the Magen Avraham are the two primary commentaries on the side of the big Shulchan Aruch, on the side of the page of Shulchan Aruch in Or HaChaim. There's also a Machlokas Rishonim about the following. Why is it that women are obligated in Lecha Mishnah? Meaning we assume that not only men, but women too, are obligated in the Su'udos of Shabbos, in having all three meals of Shabbos, including Lecha Mishnah. What is the basis of that obligation? Meaning, a lot of times people are unaware of this. They assume that since Shalashudis is served in Shul typically between Mincha and Mariv on a Shabbos afternoon, and typically in many Shuls, there aren't as many women in Shul at that time, so people assume, oh, the men who are in Shul are obligated to eat a third meal, and the women are not obligated to eat a third meal. That is not true. Women are certainly obligated in a third meal on Shabbos, just like men are obligated in the third meal on Shabbos. The question is, why are women obligated in the third meal on Shabbos? So this is a machlokas rishonim. The Ran quotes Rabbeinu Tam that women are obligated in the third meal on Shabbos, and the Ran writes they're obligated in Lecha Mishnah just like they're obligated in three meals on Shabbos, and it's simply based on the link that the Gemara makes in a couple of places in Maseches Brachos and Maseches Shavuos, Maseches Shabbos, between the mitzvah of Zachar and the mitzvah of Shomer. As we know, there are two times in the Torah where the Torah tells us the Aseres HaDibros, where the Torah presents us with the Aseres HaDibros, in Parshas Yisro and in Parshas Ve'eschanan, except there are a number of changes from one to the other. So in Parshas Yisro, we're told Zachar is Yom HaShabbos L'Kadsho. In Parshas Ve'eschanan, we are told Shomer is Yom HaShabbos L'Kadsho. We assume that Shomer is Yom HaShabbos L'Kadsho means that there's a mitzvah of Shmiras Shabbos, to be careful not to violate the losases of Shabbos, not to violate any of the malachos of Shabbos, and the mitzvah of Zachar, Yom HaShabbos Kacho, relates to Kiddush, to the mitzvah's assay of Shabbos. So says the Ran, Zachar doesn't only mean Kiddush, it means all of the mitzvah's assay of Shabbos. It means to do every positive commandment on Shabbos. And that's why women are obligated in Shalashudas, because kol she yeshno b'shamar, yeshno b'zachar. The Gemara says, anyone who's obligated in Shmira Shabbos, in the los assays of Shabbos, is also obligated in Zechiras Shabbos. So that certainly means that women are obligated in Kiddush, but some of the Rishonim suggest it also means that women are obligated in every mitzvah saseh of Shabbos, in every positive commandment of Shabbos, including the commandment of three meals, including the commandment of Lecha Mishnah. Even though it's a mitzvah saseh shazman grama, it's a time-bound positive mitzvah from which women are normally exempt, but since we have this special hekesh between Zachar and Shamar, anyone who's obligated in Shmira Shabbos is also obligated in Zechiras Shabbos. That is how half of the Rishonim understand. Other Rishonim say, no, that's not why women are obligated in three meals and Lecha Mishnah. When it comes to Zachar v'Shamar, that's only about Kiddush. Zechiras Shabbos is Kiddush, maybe Havdalah as well, but Zechiras Shabbos has nothing to do with Lecha Mishnah. So other Rishonim say, no, you know why women are obligated in Lecha Mishnah? You know why women are obligated in Suda Shlishis? That's because we have a concept that applies, that the Gemara applies in three different places, called Af Hein Hayu Ba'oso Hanes. Now, why is it that women are obligated in Mikra Megillah? Why is it that women are obligated in Dalit Kosos? Why is it that women are obligated in Ner Chanukah? Because any time we can say Af Hein Hayu Ba'oso Hanes, that they too were included in the miracle which we are commemorating, so it makes sense that they too are obligated in the mitzvah. And that's why women are obligated in Shalashudas. Shalashudas is not just stam, an obligation in three meals. It's a zecher to the man. It's to recall the man. Lecha Mishnah also is to recall the man. And women certainly received the man. Women ate the man just like the men ate the man in the Midbar. And therefore, Af Heino Yibo Sanes is what is Mechayev women. This is the machlokas between the Ran and Rabbeinu Tam as to why it is that women are obligated in Suda Shlishis, why it is that women are obligated in Lecha Mishnah, but everyone agrees that women are obligated. It's only only a question of why they're obligated. The reason I'm emphasizing this and I'm stressing this so much, that everybody agrees that women are obligated, and the only question is why they're obligated, is because there is one unusual tshuva from Rav Shlomo Kluger that seems to suggest otherwise. Rav Shlomo Kluger has a tshuva sefer. Rav Shlomo Kluger was a tremendous posek and gon, and he wrote. He was a prolific writer. He wrote many, many long tshuvos. And someone at some point, I think one of his children maybe, collected 1,000 of his tshuvos, 1,000 of his correspondences, and summarized them in like a paragraph or two, and put them all together in a single volume. And he called that sefer Ha'elef Lecha Shlomo, because it was 1,000 tshuvos of Rav Shlomo Kluger, all collected in a single volume. As fate would have it, that tshuva sefer of Rav Shlomo Kluger became much more popular than all of his other svarim, because to learn his other svarim, you really need to work hard. You need to work through the tshuvas. You need to have a lot of patience. You need to expend a lot of energy to understand the tshuvas. But the person did such a good job summarizing these 1,000 tshuvas in a paragraph or two. You get the basic idea of 1,000 different tshuvas. That became very popular. You know, very often that which is most popular is that which is easiest for people to consume. That which is easiest for people to relate to. So Ha'elef Lecha Shlomo is a very popular tshuva sefer from Rav Shlomo Kluger, and in that sefer, Rav Shlomo Kluger writes that women often do not eat shalosh udas, and he wants to be melamed zuchus. He wants to explain why is that? How could that possibly be that women don't eat shalosh udas? After all, it's a clear obligation to do so. So what he suggests is he pulls the following rabbinic sleight of hand. He says, well, we have a machlokas between Rabbeinu Tam and the Ran, why women are obligated in shalosh udas. But that means that Rabbeinu Tam thinks that the Ran's reason is not good enough, and the Ran thinks that Rabbeinu Tam's reason is not good enough. So maybe what women typically paskin like is both of them. I agree with Rabbeinu Tam that the Ran's reason isn't good, and I agree with the Ran that Rabbeinu Tam's reason isn't good, and therefore I'm left with no good reason to eat shalosh udas. That is the argument he makes. Now, that Rav Avadya Yosef writes in a tshuva, that is not how the game is, I mean, it's not a game. That is not how psak is made. That is not how, that is against the rules of how we paskin. If all of the Rishonim agree that there is a certain halacha, and they only disagree how we arrive at that halacha, we are not in a position to say that we disagree with the halacha entirely. Now, it could be that these two machlokas that we just discussed are related to each other. The machlokas, whether it's that lecha mishna is a rabbinic or biblical obligation, and the machlokas as to where the obligation for women comes from, may be related to each other. Because you see, the Balei HaTosfos in three different places in Shas discuss why it is that we do not apply Afhein Hayiba Osanes to the mitzvah of matzah, for example, or to the mitzvah of sukkah, meaning by women are obligated to matzah, but there's a special drusha that teaches that they're obligated to matzah. The Torah has to go out of the way to teach me a hekish called sheyeshnom bebal tochach chametz yeshnom bekomechal matzah. Women are putter from sukkah because we don't say Afhein Hayiba Osanes. Why don't we apply Afhein Hayiba Osanes to these fundamental mitzvos like matzah and sukkah? And the Balei HaTosfos give different answers in different places, but one of the approaches of the Balei HaTosfos is that we only apply Afhein Hayiba Osanes to mitzvos midrabanan. We would never apply the principle of Afhein Hayiba Osanes to a mitzvah d'oraisa. Ooh, so how did we start over here? Let's follow the cheshbon over here. We had a machlokas between the Magen Avraham and the Taz whether the mitzvah of Lecha Mishnah is da'oraisa or da'rabanan. We had a machlokas between Rabbeinu Tam and the Ran whether the din of Lecha Mishnah is derived from Afhein Hayiba Osanes or is derived from a drasha kol sheyeshno b'shamar yeshno b'zachar. It's possible that if you hold it's based on Afhein Hayiba Osanes, you must hold that it's only a din midrabanan. Because look at what the three applications of Afhein Hayiba Osanes have in common. Mikra Megillah, Ner Chanukah, Dalit Kosos. All three of those are din midrabanan. It's possible that we only apply Afhein Hayiba Osanes to mitzvos midrabanan. And therefore, we can only say Afhein Hayiba Osanes about Lecha Mishnah if that obligation of Lechem Mishnah is only Midrabanan. But if the obligation of Lechem Mishnah were Midah Oraisa, we would not be able to apply Afein Hayibotusa Anes. And then we'd have to say, if you hold that the obligation of Lechem Mishnah is Da Oraisa, as the Taz does, then you'd have to say it's not derived from Afein Hayibotusa Anes. It must be that the obligation for women in Lechem Mishnah is derived from a drasha. Okay, so this is fancy lamdas to explain this machlokas, but is there any nafkamina? You know, when you have a machlokas, is something daraisa or something drabanan, that is usually very fundamental. Whenever you look at any tshuva sefer, and whatever the shaila that's raised is, the very first thing the posek has to do is figure out, are we dealing with a din daraisa or are we dealing with a din drabanan? That's usually, you open up any tshuva in Igros Moshe, any tshuva in Rav Vadi Yosef, that's usually the first order of business, to figure out whether something is daraisa or drabanan. One of my talmidim told me that he was taking a bechina to get a scholarship at YU for excellence in learning. So the way the bechina worked is that you had to sit in front of a panel of Rav Meir Tversky, Rav Herschel Schechter, and Rav Michal Rosenzweig, and they get to ask you whatever questions they want, and if you survive, then you get a scholarship. So he was sitting in the Bechina, and Rav Schechter, for those, I assume everyone here is familiar with Rav Herschel Schechter, Rav Schechter has a gift, he has many gifts. One of his gifts is that he knows how to ask questions that sound like the most basic, the most simple questions, and yet you don't know the answer to them. and you feel like, I probably should really know the answer to this question. So every single din, every single line in the Gemara that this Talmud would speak about, Rav Schechter would pause and would say, wait a second, is that a din d'oraisa or is that a din d'rabanan? Right, a very basic question, but that was always his first question. Is that a din d'oraisa or is that a din d'rabanan? So my Talmud said he kept on guessing. So he kept on saying d'oraisa. And at some point, Rav Meir Tversky stopped the Bechina and said, can I just give you a bit of advice? If you can't think of a pasuk, don't guess d'oraisa. Meaning, there's one thing that it's probably not a d'oraisa if there's no pasuk that's associated with it. So if you can't think of a pasuk, it's probably not a din d'oraisa. But over here, we have a potential pasuk, and we have a machlokas, whether this is a din d'oraisa or whether this is a din d'rabanan. What might the nafkamina be? So Rav Eliada Goldwicht, in his Smichat Chaver program, pointed out that nafkamina might be where you sit down at a simcha, and you know, a wedding or something, and everyone has their own challah roll. Not at a wedding, because weddings don't happen on Shabbos. At a Shavuot Brachos, I just had my niece's Shabbos Shavuot Brachos this past Shabbos. So everyone gets their own little challah roll at the table, and you recite Hamotzi on the challah roll. But you can't remember. Did you take the challah roll of the person sitting next to you as well and join them together to have Lechem Mishnah? So you don't remember if you did Lechem Mishnah or not. So this is what we call Safek. So the most fundamental nafkamina between whether something is a din d'oraisa or something is a din d'rabanan is Safik d'oraisa l'chumra, Safik d'rabanan l'kula. That if something were a din d'oraisa, you'd have to be machmir. If something were a din d'rabanan, you'd be mekil. So what does that mean to be machmir? What would you have to do? So it could be that if you hold that it's a din d'oraisa, even though you've already washed, you've already eaten, maybe you should take two challah rolls now. Hold them together so it's Lechem Mishnah, and cut one of them in it, or cut both of them and eat from them in order to fulfill Lechem Mishnah, even if you're not going to say the bracha, because at least you have Lechem Mishnah now, even if you're not going to recite the bracha. And that relates to our shaila, because over here it's not a suffix. Over here you know you didn't do Lechem Mishnah, but maybe you have a similar Eitzah, that you can take two challahs, or take two pieces of matzah or something, hold them together, and that will be your Lechem Mishnah at this point. However, it doesn't seem that this nafkamina would hold, or that this Eitzah would be a valid Eitzah, because in Shmira Shabbos Kehilchasa, the quotes from Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach, in Perek Nun Beis of Shmira Shabbos Kehilchasa, that Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach says that the obligation of Lechem Mishnah can only be fulfilled at the beginning of the meal. And even if you definitely did not use Lechem Mishnah when reciting Hamotzi, there is no way to rectify that mistake in the middle of the meal. That would not hold as a nafkamina, because there is no way of fixing it. It can only be as you are reciting the bracha. If you've already recited the bracha, it is too late. One cannot be yotze lecha mishnah, which would mean, by the way, that for our case with the salami, you're out of luck. You just continue the meal. There's nothing you can really do about it because you're in the middle of a meal. You're not at the beginning of a meal. You've already recited your bracha. Now, how do we paskin, by the way, if it's a machlokas between the Magen Avraham and the Taz? So generally speaking, the Masorah I have from my Rebbeim is that generally speaking, we almost never paskin like the Taz. We almost always paskin like whoever is the one that's arguing on him, whether it be the Magen Avraham in Aruch Chaim, whether it be the Shach in Yerideya. We always paskin like the Magen Avrahams and the Shachs, much more so than we paskin like the Taz. Rav Soloveitchik had a tradition from Valazhin, where their tradition was that the Taz was much older than the Shach, and when the Shach wrote his Sefer, the Taz didn't want to give a haskama to the Shach because he saw that it was gevaldik and it was going to put him out of business. The Shach was so great, so in Valazhin they had a tradition to not pass like the Taz, like that was the Taz's punishment for not giving an immediate haskama to the Sefer of the Shach. In fact, Rav Shechter told us that after he printed his first Nefesh HaRav, how to categorize Nefesh HaRav, his intellectual biography of Rav Soloveitchik. It's not a biography in the sense that it doesn't tell you where Rav Soloveitchik was born and what his favorite color is and what his favorite foods to eat were or anything like that. It just tells you his Hanhagos and his Piskei Halacha. So Rav Soloveitchik, he wrote in Nefesh HaRav that Rav Soloveitchik that Rav Soloveitchik never paskin like the Taz because of that tradition. And he said years later, he got a message from one of the children of Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach. The Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach's son reached out to Rav Shechter and said, you know, my father read your entire Sefer cover to cover. Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach read the entire Nefesh HaRav. He enjoyed it very much, but he thinks you should take out that piece about the not paskining like the Taz because it's going to discourage people from learning Taz. And Rav Shechter said, by the time I got the message, I was already in the third printing of Nefesh HaRav. Of course I would have taken it out if there would have been time to do it, but there were already thousands of copies all over the world. And he said, Rav Shlomo Zalman was right. Rav Soloveitchik Taka didn't learn Taz. When Rav Soloveitchik would learn Yerideya, he learned Shulchan Aruch and Shach and Bir Agra. He didn't even learn the Taz. So Rav Shlomo Zalman was right. It does discourage people from learning Taz, and we should learn the Taz. But anyway, we generally pass on like the Magen Avraham. So given that this is the case, that you can't do it in the middle of the meal, assuming that we assume like Rav Shlomo Zalman. So are you out of options over here? There is another possible option, and that is that Shmir Shabbos Kilchasa writes that even when you eat mizonos at a kiddush and shul, it's best to take two crackers or two pieces of cake or two something in order to have lecha mishnah even at the shul, because after all, if you're attending a kiddush, you're assuming that it's kiddush b'makom su'uda, that whatever mizonos you're having qualifies as a su'uda of some sort, and therefore maybe you should have lecha mishnah when you're doing that as well. So it could be that one could be yotze lecha mishnah if you have two pieces of cake. So maybe the best etza is bench before dessert, and at dessert, take two crackers or two pieces of cake and be yotze lecha mishnah at that time. However, not everybody agrees. Shmir Shabbos Kilchasa quotes others who argue that the din of lecha mishnah applies only when you eat a meal with bread, because the Mishnah Berurah seems to paskin that you cannot fulfill your obligation of lecha mishnah with cake unless you eat enough that would require you to wash anyway, unless you're kaveh su'uda on it. Now, Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach had a hanhaga that if he would ever attend a kiddush, he would always take two crackers before he would say his mizonos as a way of fulfilling that chumrah that perhaps even at a kiddush one should be makbid on lecha mishnah. But to rely on it lekula, that would be one's fulfillment of lecha mishnah, I don't know that Rav Shlomo Zalman would say that. Probably not. Probably you cannot rely on it lekula. So someone put in the chat, wait, there still is an eitzah. There's still something that you can do over here. Can't you just bench right now and then wash again? And as soon as you wash again, you'll have lecha mishnah with the new washing. Oh, so someone else put in a chat, in a direct message to me, isn't that a bracha sheina tzricha? To bench before dessert on purpose? Or to bench right now on purpose? So certainly benching before dessert may not be a bracha sheina tzricha, because it's possible that dessert requires its own bracha anyway. That is a machlokas, whether you're having sweets for dessert, whether that requires its own bracha anyway, on cakes and the like for dessert, when you're not hungry anymore. So it certainly wouldn't be a bracha, a bracha shein tzricha for dessert. The question is it a bracha shein tzricha if you bench right now, like right after the challah, and then wash again? Is that a bracha shein tzricha? So this is a major machlokas aposkim that comes up in the context of Erev Pesach Shchalios B'Shabbos. What do we do when Erev Pesach falls on Shabbos? How do we navigate Shalosh Udos? So some of the Rishonim say, no problem, just bench the middle of your meal, wash again, and continue the meal. Other Rishonim say, no, that's Brach Shein Tzricha. You can't do that. You have to take a break for an hour at least in between. Take a walk around the block or something. You can't just make a new bracha. This year, someone texted me a shayla that their daughter on Erev Yom Kippur kept on washing, eating, benching, washing, eating, benching, because she heard from a Rebbetzin that if she washes and benches seven times on Erev Yom Kippur, it's a skula that she'll be able to celebrate her own Sheva Brachos that year, that she'll find the shidduch and she'll have Sheva Brachos that year. So her father said that this seems like you look like a lunatic. What are you doing? You're washing, benching, eating, washing, benching, eating. That seems that seems crazy. So she said, no, it's a big skula. So he said, nah, I don't know if that's halachically okay. It's probably not halachically okay, right, to wash and bench and eat. That's enetzricha. There is an argument to be made, though, that when there, and half the Rishonim hold this way, that when there's a halachic reason to do so, it is not a bracha shein etzricha. But nevertheless, one, I'm going to have to finish here because I have to give the Daf Yomi in 5 minutes, but let's just wrap it up here, that it would seem that probably the best thing to do would be finish your meal, bench, and then have an extra su'uda that Shabbos. Meaning, while one is obligated in three su'udos on Shabbos, that is not a maximum, that is a minimum. So maybe eat a little bit lighter, don't have all of the kugels and all of the side dishes and all, just have, finish your meal, bench, and then an hour or two later, have a wash again and have lecha mishnah, if you can stomach it, if a person can handle that many su'udos. But it would seem that l'chora would be the better thing to do. Even though there's no indication necessarily that I know of, that Lecha Mishnah has to be, dafka three times. It could be Lecha Mishnah is a requirement on each meal that you have on Shabbos. Meaning, let's say a person has four or five meals. Maybe they should have Lecha Mishnah at each of those meals on Shabbos. But nevertheless, the practice is that we have Lecha Mishnah three times on Shabbos. So ideally, a person should try to fulfill that. But short of that, it would seem that the opportunity is lost. So I guess we didn't get to Shailas number two and three, but I thank you so much for learning together this morning. If anyone has any questions or comments, I have approximately 3 minutes to answer questions or comments.
Really, but I'd like to thank you very, very much for this share on the subject of Lecha Mishnah. If anyone has questions to ask, please shout now. Also on the topic of the third question, which is if a person was given non-kosher wine, could they gift it to a non-Jew? Rabbi Zeman's asked me to pass on that he allows it.
Okay.
I would like to thank the Education Committee and most especially Eli Pollack on all their work in preparing for this Yom Limud, and wish everyone Shavuot Tov. Rabbi Leibowitz, that was greatly appreciated and really something for us to focus on. Many thanks.
My pleasure. Have a wonderful day. Thank you all for joining.